Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. When darkness falls, one highly regarded family of the neighborhood deals with matters of crime and drugs. It's all in the family business. BET's new miniseries kicking off tomorrow night. Executive producer Nakia Brown and executive producer creator Carl Weber joining me next from Los Angeles. If you're looking for a surefire nominee for most controversial dramedy of 2018, you may find it with The Bisexual, coming to Hulu Friday. We'll speak with executive producer Naomi DePere and producer Katie Carpenter next half hour. And our special episode this Monday wraps on matters of smart TV and new content to come from Joan Salzman, CNNNews.com's popular digital media writer. She comes by at the top of the next hour. Also ahead, Stan Lee passes away, People's Choice TV winners, LeBron's million-dollar mile, our classic trivia question, and sorry for your loss, born something unexpected in our up segment. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com. 49 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. Thank you for joining us on this Monday afternoon, Veterans Day, celebrating wraps up this Monday. Welcome to the program All About Television, a program that will be changing its format quite a bit today because a half hour or so ago, we learned of the death of the originator of Marvel Comics and one of the great icons of both comics and media overall, Stan Lee. We'll have a lot to say about him over the course of the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to join in the conversation. All you have to do is pick up the phone, raise your voice, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world. On Blog Talk Radio Speaker, we'll take your calls on Stan Lee, on what he did with Marvel Comics, the impact Marvel Comics had on television, as well as talking to our guests and the subject matter they offer. And, of course, we also have our chat room open at SimonApple04 by name. You can use that to deliver your Marvel thoughts. All you have to do is go to blogtalkradio.com/televised, look for the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, and get involved. And, of course, while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen or Speaker screen, too. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. Our guests will be live with us, the first guest from the family business from Los Angeles, after these news. And, of course, we begin with the breaking news that Stan Lee, the originator of Marvel Comics, one of the great iconic people in the world of comic book telling and media, passed away this morning in Los Angeles at the age of 95. The cause of death has not been disclosed. Of course, Lee was responsible for such superheroes as Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk, Fantastic Four, Doctor Strange, The Avengers, Iron Man, Black Panther, too many to mention over the course of an extraordinary career, a career that actually had two sides to it. In the 1940s, when he created such heroes as Captain America, and then in the 1960s, the big first Marvel age of comics. It was Stan Lee who also was one of the first people to explore the idea of translating his comics to television, first in animated form in 1966 with a nightly series called Marvel Superheroes that was syndicated around the country. And then about a year later, it was the ABC Saturday morning series Spider-Man with that Ray Ellis famous theme song, you know, Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Ran for two seasons, produced by Ralph Bashke, and that, of course, got Lee and Marvel in motion as a major factor in television, a factor that has now grown to include series on Netflix, Hulu, all over the place, and, of course, now owned by Walt Disney. Stan Lee leaves behind millions and millions of fans all over the world who enjoyed his wonderful work for so many years. Stan Lee, once again, passing away today, at the age of 95. We'd like to hear from you, your thoughts about Stan Lee. We'll also ask our guests about it, too. Once again, the number to use, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In other news, though, Freeform Shadowhunters drama preparing for its final season next year was showered with four People's Choice Awards last night. Best Show, Binge-Worthy Show, and Male-Female TV Star. Riverdale was the best drama honoree, while Orange is the New Black picked up Best Comedy. Other show winners included Dynasty for Revival, The Voice for Competition, Keeping Up with the Kardashians for Reality, and Why Not Earth for Science Fiction and Fantasy. The annual People's Choice Awards moved from CBS, where it originated and had been around for decades, to E! This year, and was simulcast by USA, Bravo, and other NBC, Universal, and cable networks. We don't know yet how many people viewed last night's telecast. Another Super Money series is coming next year from sports superstar and media mogul LeBron James. Million Dollar Mile, heading to CBS, will give away $1 million to anyone completing a mile-long obstacle course with human obstacles, many of them, along the way. Former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow and ESPN reporter anchor person Maria Taylor will co-host with Matt Money Smith. Production of this series is going forward in Los Angeles. James' other big payoff series, The Wall, awaits a third season premiere on NBC. And finally, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee will present a commercial-free holiday special on TBS December 19th. Proceeds from this program will go to various charities. And that is News Notes for today. Our first big subject this Monday afternoon is a series that was not on a lot of people's radar screen until a few weeks ago. That's when BET announced they had picked up a miniseries from two production companies working together called The Family Business. Ernie Hudson stars as the executive producer in a series about a Queens family who is very upstanding by day but crime-ridden by night. Joining us live from Los Angeles are the executive producers of the program, executive producer Nakia Brown, and executive producer and creator Carl Weber. Nakia and Carl, welcome in.
No, thank you very much. We're excited to be here.
It's great to have you both here. And Nakia, I'll start with you. We want to give all of our guests the opportunity to share anything you like about the death of Stan Lee and his impact on television. Nakia, we'll start with you.
Well, definitely, you know, just hearing the news, like you said 30 minutes ago, it was shocking because just everything that he's contributed to our industry, and specifically I just remember sitting in the theaters recently looking at Black Panther at least 5 times, and we took our whole family, we took, you know, our sorority. It was just such a community event. Avengers, what he's done with Spider-Man, he left a long legacy. So it definitely is a moment of reflection, but he was a great man that was legendary, and he will be missed, but his work will be here forever.
Carl, we talked before the program briefly, and you said that you actually were involved in the world of comic book sales, and so you got to know Stanley that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a comic book dealer for much of my 20s and a comic book collector all my life, including up to today. And, wow. I mean, Stan Lee was kind of what it was all about. And not only will he be missed, you know, we'll all be thinking about him. I'm sure it's the water cooler conversation all around the country right now.
I really hope that in the water cooler conversations, two things are front and center. One is he was one of the first people to promote diversity in comic books and in his television programming, whether it was female characters, characters of color, such as Luke Cage, such as Iron Fist. Both of now are, you know, series that were televised on Netflix. And he also was one of the first people in the world of comic books to explore what television could do for his characters, first in animation and then in live action. And, of course, we would not have a Marvel Universe in media if it wasn't for what Stan Lee and his colleagues pioneered.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, you know, even when we talk about, you know, the show that we're working on, The Family Business, when I sit down to pen any type of story, whether it be a novel or a television or a movie script, I always try to use the sensibility that Stan brought out in his characters. I mean, there's always got to be a hero, there's always got to be a villain, and there's always got to be some type of romance in the comic books.
Nakia, how did The Family Business come together? We did not know about this show until really 2 weeks ago when BET came out with a press release saying, wow, here's this program, and it's going to come on tomorrow night.
Amen. It kind of was that way for us, too. I definitely think this was a show that blew everyone away. It started off as an original film franchise. TriDestin Studios partnered with Urban Books Media to create the film. At first, it was to create multiple films, and we were in the midst of doing Family Business 2, and we already had a relationship with BET, specifically Maureen, Connie, Larissa, John, and Courtney over there, and when they saw the footage Our director, Trey Haley, had met with them. We had been talking to them about family business, and they knew that it exists. They loved Carl Weber's books already. They were already a fan of his works. And when they saw the footage, they were like, this is liquid gold. And so it kind of moved very quickly. We had to immediately go talk to SAG and see how we could transform this from a, you know, indie franchise into a legitimate TV show. And we were just so blessed already to have characters and actors like Ernie Hudson, Armand Asante, Darren Henson, Javicia, Valerie Pettiford. So, and the list goes on and on. Malik Yoba, Gary Dordan, and Sean Ringgold, and Arrington. I mean, like, we have an amazing, amazing cast that has done a body
amazing.
Of work. Yes, Christian Keith. It's just like, I can't continue. The list goes on and on. And I think everyone was so excited that people, actors of this esteem, of this regard, of this respect, were coming to the table to bring a New York Times best-selling book of Carl Weber's to life and bring these characters to life, that it was just, it all came together. It's like a windstorm. And so for all of us, this has happened very quickly, but when you pray for something, you have to rise to the occasion, and that's what we're doing now, and we're very excited about it.
And you can see The Family Business tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on BET. We are talking this half hour with executive producer Nakia Brown, executive producer and the creator of the series, Carl Weber. They're both live in Los Angeles with us this half hour. On tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us on this Monday afternoon, where we are also not only paying tribute to Stan Lee, who passed away earlier today in Los Angeles, but we're also paying tribute to veterans and their families who have served this country and this world well. And we'd like to get you involved in the conversation, so please do 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We're back on the air Friday, and joining us will be Stephen Conrad, the creator, executive producer of Patriot, the popular Amazon series that premiered its second season last Friday and already getting rave reviews. Some critics are even calling it one of the year's not only most improved programs in the world of scripted television, but one of the best shows of the year, period. Stephen Conrad from Patriot, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Carl, how did you come up with the idea of The Family Business and then bring all these actors into your universe?
Well, similar to like we were talking about with someone like Stan Lee, I wasn't trained as a writer, but my comic book background kind of gave me this whole idea for a world. And in this particular world, the Duncans are a family that own exotic car dealerships. And at night, they're underworld figures. And I always wanted to write something similar to The Godfather, because it was one of my favorite books. It also became one of my favorite movies. So in talking to my partners, we decided that we wanted to do something in television or film, and it was my job to come up with something that was going to be exciting, and everybody likes a good gangster story. And so, you know, my favorite television show of all times is The Wire. So I kind of took a little spin from The Wire, a little spin from some of the other subject matters that I've been writing about, and we came up with the Duncans. They're loosely based on one of my best friend's family, and we started to put together the characters, and we wanted to give everybody their own distinct personality. So in doing so, the first person that I thought about as I was writing the lead character, which is L.C. Duncan, was Ernie Hudson. I just loved the way he portrayed different characters and how he could change things from Ghostbusters, The Hand that Rocked the Cradle, even, you know, the Netflix show, I want to say Frankie and Grace. So he's such a great actor that having him as the patriarch was easy. I've got a great friendship along with Nakia with Valerie Pettiford, so that was really easy to cast, to be honest with you. I mean, she could play anybody, and being the mother of a family like this just became easy. And then when we started to go through the siblings, I had relationships, Nakia had relationships, and we just started to talk amongst ourselves about who would be the best people for it, and a lot of the characters just kind of fell right into place.
Nataya, this is a saga of an upwardly mobile family in Jamaica, Queens, that seems to have it, on the surface, have it all. And they're successful, and they want to be more successful. And then they also decide, well, we want to turn to a life of crime. We want to be equally successful at that. What does the series bring out about that desire? Why does this family that has this standing in the neighborhood want to be in crime in the first place?
I think that's more of a Carl Weber question, since he created these characters.
Well, I think the answer to that is that they don't necessarily want to be in crime. It's kind of something that the family a while ago, you could almost look at L.C. Duncan as a modern-day Joe Kennedy. He was just trying to do what was best for his family. And one thing led to another. If it was up to L.C. Duncan, he would just own a car dealership. But sometimes when you get into relationships, you can't get out of them without consequences. So what he's trying to do is to raise his family as a family and do some of the things that have happened to keep his family alive and to keep them strong and able to move on to the next generation. So it's not so much about why he's involved with crime to an extent as much as why he has to be.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback on that to say that this show, I think the fabric of it is more about family, more about loyalty, more about protection. And those are the things that, you know, we look to portray when you see this show. It's kind of like I remember, you know, a long time ago when The Sopranos were on, you know, it's that quality, The Godfather, those type of movies. That's what you feel in this show. And it's very powerful to see a grandfather to protect his children and his children to protect their children. It's multi-generational, and it's really the fabric is family more than anything else.
I believe
yeah,
we have
I would
a call.
Even
we're
say,
going to take it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Carl, and then we're going to take a call. Hold on. Go ahead, Carl.
I was going to say, I would even say that more so than anything, that this show is, yeah, there's a crime element to it, but it's really the fashion and the cars
yes.
and the high society. And New York, which is really a character in the story, those things are kind of more they overshadow some of the criminal element about it. In some cases,
that,
you
yeah.
might even call this another form of a dynasty or a Dallas.
Yes, and that was very important. And Carl, you can piggyback on this. With our director Trey Haley and Carl, when we were talking about the visuals and the, you know, the fashion and the costumes, the set design, it's a very high end show.
Nataya, given the fact that you and Carl run companies that are fairly new in television production, and you're relatively newcomers compared to so many networks and programmers and production companies in the medium. Were you surprised by the level of talent you were able to get for this? You know, not just Ernie Hudson, but people like Armand Asante and Valerie Pettiford and Nick Turturro and Malik Yoba, you know, people who have been veterans in all sorts of television projects.
You know, I wouldn't say surprised. We were more blessed, and I feel like when you are walking in the anointing, like this project feels destined. To be honest, it feels bigger than all of us. It feels like, you know, it's part of God's plan because it contributes so much in the images that it's showing that we need as a community, that we need as a world. Like Carl said, it puts you in the frame of the dynasties and the Dallas where you were able to dream bigger and be bigger in the cars. And so I just feel like that our actors got that. They get when they read the material, you know, like I said, to bring characters to life that is from a New York Times best-selling book that already have millions of fans loving the characters, our actors, and it's so diverse. and I love that too. Like, we have Emilio Rivera. So it's like our actors always don't get the opportunity to play these type of characters that are so fulfilled, because when you're writing a book that's 400 pages, you know, it's more action on the page, it's more description on the page, the characters are so full. And so for us as executive producers, and like I said, with Trey as the director, to see these actors get to play these roles, like Valerie Pettifer, for instance, she always says, this character is a dream come true. And for most of the actors, that's what it was for them, to be able to play a character that's so dynamic and so powerful, and not the victim, but the victor. That's why I think all the actors came to the table.
Carl, how'd you like producing the show on the streets of Queens or on the streets of New York?
Amazing. Carl is from New York, so he gave us, you know, it's like we all, you know, we all are from different places, you know, whether it's Los Angeles, some people were from Cleveland, some people were, you know, from Jamaica. So when we arrived in New York, Carl just gave us the first class tour, and we went from everywhere from the Hamptons to New York to, you know, and Carl, you can go into it more because it's your city.
Well, I mean, most of my books are based, you know, in New York. And living in New York, I just wanted to, you know, as my director would say, give it that flavor. But as far as producing, you know, I've spent my time working on some other films, you know, learning the craft, and with the help of Nakia and Trey and the rest of the Tridestine team, along with the Urban Books Media team, you know, I've learned a lot, and I feel really good about it. I think we've got something that's going to be around for a while, and I'm looking forward to being a part of the TV industry for quite some time.
Yeah, and I will say, too, we've been very supported by Viacom and BET, and specifically, I have to say it again, Connie and Maureen and Larissa and Courtney and John, from day one, they got it.
Hands clapping for them, that's for sure.
Yes, yes, and it's been long nights and long days to pull this off, but we've done it, and we're very excited to bring it to the world.
You're hearing Nakia Brown. She's the executive producer. Carl Webb, the executive producer and creator of The Family Business. It's the new miniseries coming to BET tomorrow night, 9:10 Eastern and Pacific time. They're joining us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. 9th edition coming your way this Monday afternoon. We're honoring Veterans Day, the veterans across the nation, around the world, who have given us the supreme being of service in honor of this world and what it can stand for. If you have a question or comment for our guests, or you want to weigh in on the passing of Stan Lee, we want to hear from you. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next week, Thanksgiving week, we're going to come your way with back-to-back-to-back episodes next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving. And on that Wednesday episode, one of our guests will be the creator of the brand-new series on Facebook Watch, Queen America, Megan Oppenheimer. That is the series where Catherine Zeta-Jones will make her scripted TV series debut. Megan Oppenheimer, creator of Queen America, a week from Wednesday, November 21st, day before Thanksgiving, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. As mentioned near the top, both of you run your own production companies, and Nakia, we'll start with you. Are you looking at doing more television? And if so, what's on the roadmap?
Oh yes, we're looking to do a lot more. I think the next one, Carl, can I say it?
Sure.
The next one is another project with Carl in Tridestine Studios and Urban Books, called Influence. We're very excited about that. And I have to, you know, shout out my mom and dad. My mother just passed a year ago, but they were here with us from the beginning. And just to see this come into fruition, it's just a dream come true. So that'll be next up. And we have a plethora of other film projects, too. And Throwback Holiday will also be on BET December 15th. It's a Christmas movie. So we're really excited about all to come.
And what's that all about? What's that Christmas sleeper movie all about?
Oh, the Christmas movie, Throwback Holiday, stars Jennifer Freeman. A lot of people know her from My Wife and Kids. And it's about a woman that is in her 30s and looks back on life and wishes that she had made some different choices. and is able to go back in time. That's her Christmas wish, and is able to go back in time and make better choices for her life. And as a result of those choices, everything changes for the better. And so around Christmas time, you know, that's when we, you know, we think about our ancestors and our people that are gone, you know, that are no longer with us, and we wish that we could have hugged them more, loved them more, and, you know, just made different choices. And this character gets to do that, and it's just a beautiful, magical movie that we're excited about bringing, you know, to our BET family once again.
Incidentally, I want to remind people that Connie is Connie Orlando. I believe that she is the head of original programming at BET, and Maureen Guthman is one of her colleagues there. And, Carl, you have your own company, Urban Books Media. What's on the TV agenda for that company, aside from hopefully maybe getting another season of Family Business?
Well, obviously, we're hoping for another season of Family Business. Like Nakia said, we're going to be working on Influence, which is about a legal family living in Harlem, New York. And then I've got quite a few scripts that I've been penning, and I'm going to be sitting down with the Tri-Destin folks and some other folks as far as finding outlets for them, and we'll be getting those. But right now we're looking forward to finishing up Family Business and getting to Influence.
Yes.
The program is The Family Business. It's BET's latest miniseries, and you can start catching it tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on BET. Check your locals for where that network is available in your area, on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, BET.com. And again, a very unusual situation because two production companies are involved with BET in the venture, and they are Urban Books Media, which Carl Weber runs, and also Tri-Destin Studios, which Nakia runs. Nakia and Carl, thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on getting this show off the ground. Hopefully the beginning of many, many more television projects with both of your two companies, BET and other programs as well. It's been a pleasure to have you both aboard.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thank you for the Stanley comments, too. They're much appreciated.
Amen.
Oh, definitely.
You're welcome. Take care. All the greatest.
Okay. The same to you. Be blessed.
Nakia Brown and Carl Weber joining us live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Back with more of our program and our classic trivia question of the week, but first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Last couple of weeks, we've been mentioning that if you take a free trial to Audible.com, you not only get one free audiobook, but you get two more titles from the popular new Audible Theater series. If you haven't heard, Audible Theater is brand new original audio productions, classic Broadway plays, off-Broadway shows, one woman, one man, monologue projects, and original drama and comedy programming, all under the Audible Theater banner. And now, for a limited time, if you decide to take a one-month trial at Audible.com, you get three, that's right, one, two, three audiobooks free, a title of your choice, and two of the Audible Theater productions, also of your choice. Remember that Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or iHeartRadio. Remember, all you got to do to sign up is go to audibletrials.com/televised. Audibletrials.com/televised. Get one free audio book, plus two more Audible Theater titles, and a one-month trial, and great customer service from the fine folks at Audible's parent, Amazon.com. Hear for yourself why Audible can transform the way you hear the world. AudibleTrial.com/televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. Very briefly, we'll repeat the question we launched a week ago. And if you are first with the correct answer, you'll win two prizes. The DVD set of the recently premiered National Geographic special Inside North Korea's Dynasty premiered last night. Second half will run a week from this past Sunday night. Also, we've got The Genius Box. It's the new book by the popular best-selling author and TV observer David Tice, who was on this program several weeks ago. Here's the question. Remember the Green Hornet? Popular ABC series ran the season 1967. Dan Williams played the Dark Crusader. Bruce Lee, superstardom he rose to as Kato, his wonderful servant. The question, what was the Green Hornet's day job on the television series? What was the Green Hornet's day job on that television series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to include your name and your full name and address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win those prizes. And if you missed the question just now, we'll try to see if we can bring it back before we leave you about an hour from now. Or if not, we'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. So get in the game and see if you can become our latest Classic Trivia winner. When we come back, the Facebook Watch series, Sorry for Your Loss, has formed something very unique and very special. But first, we're going back live to Los Angeles, and we've got a lovely connection as well, and we'll bring you the two people behind one of the most controversial new dramedies of the year, Hulu's The Bisexual. Now, Naomi DePere and Katie Carpenter join me after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com and Spreaker.com, more than 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for the Women of Power Hour. Check it out every week, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR available 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to part two, second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Monday afternoon. For many people, it's Veterans Day or day after Veterans Day 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from Nueva York. 49 degrees at the top of the hour. We're also marking the passing of Stan Lee, the founder of Marvel Comics, and so many incredible comic and then their TV characters from Iron Man to Spider-Man. He passed away earlier today in Los Angeles at the age of 95. If you'd like to call in with your thoughts about Mr. Lee and what he had the chance to create, give us a call, along with talking to our guests as well, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Over the 11-plus years we've been doing this program, when we've talked about scripted television, we've hit many controversial themes, whether it's racism, the gay and lesbian community, or being transgender. Well, we're going to hit another controversial topic on today's program, so I wanted to give some of you a heads up on that. It's a topic that will be covered in dramedy form this Friday on Hulu. It's called The Bisexual. Joining us live in an exclusive interview from both Los Angeles and London is the executive producer of the series, Naomi DePere, and the producer, Katie Carpenter. Naomi and Katie, welcome to the program. And let me see if we have them. Naomi and Katie, are you there?
Can you hear us? We're here.
Yes, you are on. We appreciate it. Thank you both for joining us again. And as we're doing with all of our guests, Naomi and Katie, any thoughts you have about the passing of Stan Lee and the contribution he made to society through Marvel Comics and later Marvel TV shows?
Oh, well, I'm a massive fan of Jessica Jones and Spider-Man and all of those things. I think in terms of diversity and representation, they're incredible stories that empower people, so it's a real tragedy.
And in many respects, Stan and his colleagues really changed the depiction of women as superheroes. Both in comics, then in animation, then on television. I mean, we Wonder Woman, of course, was one of the first great animation, was one of the great comic superheroes, but it was really characters like Sue Storm in the Fantastic Four, and then later on Scarlet Witch, and so many other characters, including Jessica Jones, that really changed the face of how women are depicted in comic books, and then later in terms of being superheroes on television. Naomi, let's start with you. How did this program, The Bisexual, come to be? And I understand that our guests have dropped out, so we're going to try again to get you back on the line. If you can call us back, 646-652-2906, at 646-652-2906. Number is good anywhere. If you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. So Naomi and Katie, give us a call back, and we'll get you back on the air. By the way, The Bisexual begins Friday on Hulu. And, of course, you can check out Hulu on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices and go at Hulu.com. And let's see if Naomi and Katie are back. Naomi and Katie are back with us. Hello, Naomi and Katie, are you back? Try again. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906, and as soon as we see that you're back on the line, we'll get you back. So once again, give us a call, 646-652-2906, and if anybody from Hulu is listening, if they can get them both back together, that would be great. And as soon as I see them on the Blog Talk Radio screen, we'll bring them back on there. In the meantime, if you have thoughts on Stan Lee and his wonderful career and what he did with Marvel Comics, first in comics and animation, of course, in television as well as movies. Give us a call, too. We want to hear from you, 646-652-296, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up on Friday's episode, we'll have Stephen Conrad. He is the creator and executive producer of the popular Amazon series Patriot, which last Friday began its second season, getting rave reviews for it. And coming up next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we will be with you back-to-back-to-back with outstanding episodes for you. And one of our episodes will have on November 21st, week from Wednesday, Megan Oppenheimer, the creator of Queen America. That's the new Facebook Watch series starring Catherine Zeta-Jones. I believe we now have Naomi and Katie on the line. Are both of you back with us?
So sorry about that. I think it turns out the show is so controversial it made the line explode. I don't know what happened there. I'm sorry, Simon.
No problem, and we're happy to have you both back. And Naomi, let's start with you. How did the bisexual come to be? What led to the creation of the show?
Desi and I met, I think it was about 3 years ago. I'd seen her film Appropriate Behavior, and she had an American version of the first episode that she met various producers in the UK about, and we really got on very well. We shared a vision for what the show could be and what it could look at. And I was very lucky that she chose me to make the show with. We then changed that first episode quite a lot and transferred the story from New York to London and a lot of the characters from being American to being British, or indeed, as it turned out, a lot of Irish cast as well, but still with Desi at the center of it starring.
Mm-hmm. Katie, what is this show saying about the nature of bisexuality or the nature of how we react to it as people?
I think that the show really looks at two things in terms of bisexuality. I think, firstly, the fact that bisexuality is a kind of taboo, indeed, maybe even a kind of hidden issue in both gay communities and straight communities. Across the series, you see Desi's character, Layla, struggling to come out to both her gay friends and her straight housemates. I think the second issue in terms of bisexuality that the series looks at is really one where there's so much prejudice that Layla has against herself. I think she's so frightened of losing the kind of gay friends that she's built around her. She's an outsider in London. Her friends are very important to her in terms of kind of anchoring her and giving her a home. I think she's so scared of losing them, but I also think that she's so kind of lost in terms of her own identity, and really the series follows her coming to terms with her bisexuality and actually being open about it, saying for the first time I think I might be bisexual, and then moving to her really owning and celebrating that identity.
Mm-hmm. When this series was crafted, how did the story evolve? And then we'll go back to you. How did the story evolve so that it was, it could be related to people, whether you're bisexual or not?
Well, that was the interesting thing, actually. Channel 4, Fiona and Jack at Channel 4, and also Jess and Jacqueline at Hulu were really supportive, and it was definitely an ongoing conversation with two very very supportive broadcasters. And what we all wanted it to do is to be a show that people would come to and realize was about them, whoever they were and whoever they were in terms of the sex they were having or the relationships they were in, and that's really what we wanted to do, is to make it feel very universal. Because I mean, I think a lot of people will come to it thinking it's a dating show about the difference between men and women, and actually it's not about putting people in those boxes. It's sort of about the fact that even Gabe, who is the most, in inverted commas, normal character in the show, he's a straight white man, kind of comes from quite, therefore, an easy, in inverted commas, background. He has his own reasons for desiring what he desires and being dysfunctional in his own way. And I think a lot of the comedy looks at the preconceptions that all of the characters have about each other because of how those people are labeled, and then exploding those and showing that actually everybody's the same. Everybody has shame, everybody has prejudices, and everybody has very specific reasons to do with who they are on the inside and how they view the world on the outside as to who they end up in relationships with.
The two people who created and wrote this series, Desiree Akava, if I mispronounced, I apologize, Desiree Akava and Cecilia Bukele, how much of the series was based on their own existence, their own relationships, and how much was based on sort of scoping out the scene?
Debbie and Chechi have written and worked together for a long time. They did Appropriate Behaviour and then The Miseducation of Cameron Post, and throughout in East London, which is where the series is set. So although the series and the events of the series are fictional, a lot of the places that the series occurs in are very much real places and based on kind of parties and club nights, things like that, that they have been to. And it really, it was amazing watching them write together, because you would be kind of sitting down in a room talking about, you know, maybe we should have a scene here, or maybe they should go to a party here. And they would suddenly, that would suddenly kind of set them off on an anecdote that happened like 10 years ago. And really, it was like watching them kind of, so, you know, talk about memories and building stories up from a kind of patchwork of lots of different things that had happened to them. And it was great kind of being able to then feed in your own stories. So I think the series as a whole is a kind of, yeah, patchwork of lots of different experiences that have happened to us, kind of thrown into a kind of fictional world.
Hulu begins its run of The Bisexual this Friday. And, of course, Hulu is available on most smart TV sets as well as smart TV devices, from Amazon Fire TV to NVIDIA Shield to TouchNet Wave and many, many others. We've got two of the key people involved in the making of the series, which is six episodes, and that's Naomi DePayo, the executive producer, and Katie Carpenter, the producer. They're joining us live from Los Angeles and London this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman with you live from New York. Thank you very much for joining us on this Monday afternoon of 2018, Veterans Day here in the United States, where we, of course, honor and acknowledge all the veterans and their families who have made the call to serve our nation and our world very, very well. If you have questions or comments for our guests, be involved. Get involved. Do our phone call, 646-652-2906, no matter where you are far across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Squeaker, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up our next half hour, Joan Saltzman, the popular senior digital media writer of CNNnews.com, will join me. We'll talk about where things are headed in the world of television going into 2019, everything from smart TV sets and devices, what they can do, especially with artificial intelligence. We'll get her thoughts about Stan Lee's passing, and we'll also get her thoughts about some of the new players coming to television next year, like Apple and Walmart and WarnerMedia and Disney Plus. That's all coming up in our next half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And also coming up later this half hour, we'll have an up segment about a very unique outreach that was spawned by the popular new and critically acclaimed new Facebook Watch series, Sorry for Your Loss. Katie, what was it like to work with Desiree, not only as the writer and the creator of the series, but also as one of the co-stars?
It was a really quite incredible experience. I think watching someone wearing so many different hats, she wrote the series or co-wrote it, she directed the series, and she was in the series, and watching someone juggle all those different roles was really quite incredible. And I think what she does so well is sort of empower the various members of her crew to really kind of take ownership and you know, make what they want to make too. It's like a really collaborative atmosphere on set. It was also a really female crew. It was the most female crew that I've worked with before, which was also really great to see, because obviously the show kind of looks at sex in a very honest way, and I think it felt like it became a very open space in which people felt kind of safe to kind of talk openly and also obviously perform in those sex scenes. But it was incredible watching her work. And she always had a very, very kind of clear idea of what she wanted to do, particularly with those sex scenes. She always talks about them as each one sort of telling a different story. So she would always plan them very carefully beforehand, and we'd have long discussions about what exactly the story of each scene was, which again is something that I hadn't done before and was a really interesting way to work.
Naomi, there's also an actress who plays her business partner on the series, played by a woman named Maxine Peake. And I have a hunch a lot of people are going to be talking about her, especially once this series goes on Hulu on Friday.
Yeah, she's an incredible actress. She's someone who's just got so much weight and heart and integrity on screen and stage in the UK. She's a very, very, very well-respected actress in the UK. And I think she just brings such a truth to that character, and her and Desi have an amazing chemistry. And I think you feel you totally buy into the fact that these two women have set up this incredible business and have wrapped their lives around each other. And the question is never, you know, should Layla as a character was Sadie the right person to be with? I think through the series you can always see why Layla was absolutely, and perhaps still is absolutely in love with Sadie. That's never the question of the series. The series is more, can these people coexist, and are they in a place where they can remain together right now? And I think that's one of those interesting questions about, and the different things that women want from relationships. It's interesting that they've been together late for a long time. And one of the questions the show asks is, you know, Layla's given Sadie her 20s, and in a way Sadie's given Layla her 30s, so who gave the greater gift? And I think that's a really interesting question to ask in terms of the time issues around women's lives and all of that kind of stuff. So we look into that as well across the series, and Maxine just does a brilliant job. She's just one of the coolest women I've ever met and ever worked with, and we were all slightly in awe, to be honest.
In fact, Katie, a lot of the cast in the series will be fairly new to American television, and in some cases new to British television as well. What was it like to bring all this talent together, especially newcomers who may have never done television for the first time, and may have, you know, had some, was there a little bit of stereotype breaking in terms of their thoughts about doing a series like this?
I think we were always really keen that this series should feel real, or as real as a fictional show can feel, and that definitely was something we spoke about in terms of casting. And I think what we didn't want to do is kind of fill the show with kind of faces that almost burst a bubble, you know, when you have someone you really recognize and it sort of somehow takes you out of the show. And Desi, in her previous work, has done a lot with kind of actors who haven't really acted before. And when we were looking at the friends that would surround Layla, we were keen to kind of bring that level of authenticity to it. And I think someone who's, you know, Saskia Chana, who plays Layla's best friend, Dennis, is a really good example of that. She'd hardly done anything in terms of television before she was in the show. And she brings this real kind of authenticity, but also a kind of different rhythm in a way, performance to everyone else. And I think that really allows the comedy in her role, which is very deadpan, to kind of sing out. And it just created a really exciting atmosphere on set, because you felt like everyone was able to kind of really bring a bit of themselves to the role, which was nice to see.
Naomi, what has been the response so far to this? I'm assuming that the series has aired on British television, and of course is coming to Hulu on Friday for the rest of the world, us included here in the United States. What has been the early reaction to the series? What are people telling you? What's their conclusion?
I think people have come to the show and being surprised, perhaps because of the title, at how much everybody they identify with the show and feel that it's about them, whether they're gay, bisexual, straight, whatever. There is a real feeling of people feeling represented in the show is basically about a group of human beings, all of whom are getting in and out of relationships in ways that feel very familiar. And I think that's the main thing we've taken from it, is people laugh and cry. I think it elicits both responses from people. It's both very emotional, but it's also very funny. And there's a lot of quite quotable lines in there. You know, there's a lot of things said that I think people are interested in talking about after they've watched the show. And but at the same time, it's not an issues-led show. It's not sort of banging any sort of particular drum. It really is a comedy at the end of the day. It's an awkward comedy that feels very real. And I think as in Desi's other work, the thing that people seem to really be responding to is how truthful the sex scenes are. These are sex scenes that occur between two people, and you're there for the beginning of the sex scene, for the conversation beforehand, you're there throughout it, and then you're there afterwards in the awkward or warm conversation that they have afterwards, and all of the things that go on around the sex. Unlike in other TV and films where, you know, people might fall through a front door carrying each other and then cut to the next morning and they're drinking coffee, like, we really look at all of the different facets and everything that goes on between two people when they have sex, which isn't just about the sex. It's about who those two people are and where they're at in their lives at that time. And sex, you know, is a kind of conversation, whether there's an actual conversation happening or not during it. So I think those are the things people have, and yeah, people find it a lot of fun, I think, and not like anything else. That's what we hear a lot, that it really doesn't feel like anything else. And I think for a lot of viewers as well, for certain communities of viewers, it feels like this is the first show that actually feels like it speaks to them. And there's been a massive outpouring of that on Twitter. You know, there are a lot of underserved audience members out there. And I know when I was 15, I would have killed for a show like this to exist. You know, people want to see themselves and their own philosophical questions that they ask themselves put out on screen. And it doesn't happen that often when it comes to relationships and sexuality.
We're speaking with the pair behind the production of The Bisexual. It's a first-of-its-kind television series that is now on British television and is coming to Hulu this Friday for the United States and the rest of the world. We're speaking with executive producer Naomi DePere and producer Kitty Carter live from Los Angeles and London this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New York. In our remaining moments, if you have a question or comment for Naomi or Katie, take the ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, next week, we'll be with you Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of Thanksgiving week, back-to-back-to-back episodes at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, and on our special Wednesday episode, it's a week from Wednesday, November 21st, pre-Thanksgiving Day. One of our guests will be the creator of the brand-new Facebook Watch series with Catherine Zeta-Jones, Queen America, Megan Oppenheimer. Exclusive interview live with us. That's a week from Wednesday, November 21st, one of our 3 back-to-back-to-back episodes. Thanksgiving week, our treat to you, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Naomi, when all is said and done, how did Desiree feel with the series? Does she feel that she and her colleague Cecilia said everything they need to say, or are they already starting to think about a second season?
Oh, God, they've got bags of ideas for a second season. There's so much. I mean, I don't want to give anything away, but in terms of where we leave all of the characters, there's lots of questions yet to be answered. And also, you know, people's relationships and sexualities and the way that they interact with each other and the friendships, they're never solved. Those things are never solved. So, and there's certain characters in the first series who we'd like to dig deeper to in the second series. And, there's a lot there to be looked at.
And Katie, do you have the go-ahead for a second season? If you do, when will production start?
That would be next year sometime. And we'll know soon about the second series.
Uh-huh. All right. And we will leave the conversation there. First season, hopefully of many, of a very controversial but a show worth your watching, The Bisexual. It debuts Friday on Hulu. It's available on many smart TV sets and smart TV devices, whether the set comes from Samsung, Vizio, LG, Hisense, etc., or it's available through Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Roku, Google Chromecast, etc., etc., etc. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, Hulu.com, HULU.com. The Bisexual. It's definitely worth watching, and you can start seeing it this Friday. Naomi DePere, Katie Carpenter, the executive producer and producer, respectively, of the series. Thank you both for joining us from L.A. and London. Pleasure to have you with us. Good luck with the series here in the United States and around the world. And hopefully this series does a lot in terms of educating us all about how we see gender identity now and in the future. It's been a pleasure to have you both with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Naomi and Katie. Best of all, by the way, best, of course, to Desiree and the studio and the rest of your cast and crew. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Naomi DePere, Katie Carpenter, joining us live from Los Angeles and London from the new Hulu series, The Bisexual. It starts this Friday. And now time for Up. as an update, where we catch up on some of the guests and topics we have had on recent episodes of this program. Back in mid-September, we showcased a Facebook Watch show dealing with grief, one woman's grief after the death of her husband. The program is Sorry for Your Loss. It was created by Kit Steinkellner. It was produced by Lizzie Weiss, who was also the executive producer and creator of the Peabody Award-winning ABC Family series, Switch at Birth. Both of them were on this program in mid-September. We've had more than 1,000 replays since. It was an amazing interview. And the show, which stars Elizabeth Olsen, has had a wide, wide critical acceptance. But something has happened with the making of that show that you ought to know about. And it's this: the beginning and the maintenance of a special Facebook commentary site for widows and people who have dealt with grief. And it all happened as a result of watching the program. The people on their own decided, mostly women, decided to make this commentary a regular thing on Facebook Watch, both openly and in a closed site. And here's some of, and by the way, it's a site where people not only talk about the characters in Sorry for Your Loss, but they talk to each other about their own experiences losing family members, husbands, sons, daughters, cousins, etc. Some of the comments, I'll give you three of them. Thank you for giving us a peace into your past. Here's another one. Just remember that you're not going through this alone. And a third, we all have to show up for ourselves, but that doesn't mean we can't come together for each other. Really amazing thoughts. All put down on Facebook, all after people not only saw an episode or more of Sorry for Your Loss, but decided to keep the conversation going, not only with themselves, but with each other. And we're happy to say that that community of people, especially women, has expanded over the last month or two. Sorry for Your Loss is continuing in its first season on Facebook Watch. Facebook Watch is available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And I said, it was a pleasure to have the creator, Kit Steinkellner, and the producer, Lizzie Weiss, on this program. And it looks like Facebook Watch is going to give this series starring Elizabeth Olsen, who some people are even touting for an Emmy Award next year as Best Actress in a Drama Series, and maybe for the Peabody Award, a second season. It looks mighty, mighty good. So what really is striking to me is that it shows you that, yes, a series like this can not only provoke conversation, but it can encourage others to find support, to find condolences, and maybe even to complete their grief through a program like this. So kudos to Facebook for hearing their audience and for allowing this ongoing conversation to happen. And, of course, if you want to see that conversation, you, of course, go to Facebook.com and to the page for Sorry for Your Loss. Once again, series available on Facebook Watch. And you can also check out our interview with Kit Steinkellner and Lizzie Weiss at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. And thank you to the more than 1,000 replays that we've had. Thank you all for your listening. We will continue to have that particular episode on our homepage, and we hope we get many, many more. And congratulations to Kit and Lizzie for the great impact this series has had on its audience and on others too. And we'll keep you posted if Sorry for Your Loss gets a second season on Facebook Watch. Once again, speaking of Facebook Watch and scripted television shows, 1 week from Wednesday, Megan Oppenheimer, the creator of Queen America, that's the next major new scripted series from Facebook Watch. It'll premiere. It's going to premiere, by the way, later this week. And it features Catherine Zeta-Jones in her first original scripted television series. Megan Oppenheimer from Queen America joins us live next Wednesday, November 21st, on our pre-Thanksgiving Day edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, make it so easy for you, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check us out in podcast form anytime you like at iTunes, Apple TV, or Spreaker's podcast app, and also at iHeartRadio.com on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Just put Tomorrow Will Be Televised in the search bar at iHeartRadio.com, click that bar, and you get our episodes then and there. When we come back, finally, at last, Joan Tobman, the senior digital media writer at News.com, joins me here in New York. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll start that conversation after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet. www.blogtalkradio.com and Spreaker.com, together serving more than 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Kings in the Morning. Check it out every weekday. Jay, King, and crew, they have a lot to share with you. It's Kings in the Morning, great conversation radio, weekdays, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Noir We Televised on this Veterans Day, Monday afternoon, 2018. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Appelbaum with you live from New York, 49 degrees at the top of the hour. Very cool down day today. We're supposed to get rain overnight and then in tomorrow morning, and then we're supposed to hover between 40 and 50 degrees for the rest of the week, mostly on the sunny side. We have another great guest coming your way this half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. At 646-652-2906. Number good anyway, we catch us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. We have our chat room in business, Simon Apple 04. Find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And we invite you to be in the room. Don't forget also Facebook icon. You use that to connect others to the program you are hearing right now. Just click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker screen, follow the instructions, and through the timeline feature, they can be live with you. For those of you that missed our top of the hour, if you haven't heard the major news, Stan Lee, the originator of Marvel Comics, the creator of such superheroes from Doctor Strange to Iron Man to the Avengers, passed away earlier today in Los Angeles at the age of 95. And we've been spending a lot of the program talking about that. We'll also spend more about Lee's contribution to the media, TV in particular, on Friday's episode. We're trying to get a guest who may know Lee, and we'll keep you posted about that throughout the week. But right now, somebody that we have been trying to get on this program for several weeks, and I believe we finally now have a very good pleasure to welcome back to the program the senior digital media correspondent for CNetNews.com right here in New York, Joan Saltzman. Hi, Joan.
Hey, Simon. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. We're giving all of our guests the opportunity to share their Stan Lee thoughts. Any from you?
You know, Stan Lee, he holds a hallowed place, especially at CNET. CNET is full of geeks in every respect, whether it's tech geeks or cultural geeks. And so Stan Lee means a lot to all of us here. We, I think, you know, we all communicate here on Slack, and I think when he, when the news broke that he had passed, there was this, like, almost unprecedented flurry of activity among people. Like, you know, we covered this story just like we would cover something gigantic from Apple or Amazon, because he's such an iconic and powerful figure throughout the decades, right? Like, he's touched people that are my age, people that are children today, and people that are his age. He's kind of stretched through the generations, hasn't he?
And through the generations, Joan, he presented with his colleagues superheroes that were relatable to people. They had flaws. They were dealing with all sorts of issues, including just basically living. He created the first superheroes. They created,
yeah.
Marvel created women who were empowered for the first time, whether they were villains or heroes or heroines. He was able, one of the first people, as I mentioned earlier, he was one of the first people to look at animating his superheroes with Marvel superheroes, with Spider-Man, and live-action versions of Spider-Man and other superheroes. And, of course, now we have the Marvel Universe, where you have networks from Netflix to ABC to Disney presenting his work in animation and live-action form. It's really an incredible story.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that it's also interesting how, as superheroes have migrated from, you know, like, it was groundbreaking. It's interesting how his dedication to diversity and breaking molds has been able to cross over into mainstream culture, because, of course, comics were always mainstream in their certain way, as in the original form that he created the characters that he did. But now that, you know, Marvel is the, like, most box office dominating franchise among, you know, arguably in the world, that's bringing this kind of diversity into tentpole films. You know, like the fact that Black Panther was so huge, the fact that there are these roles for women that you don't often see, nuanced characters for women you don't often see in a superhero movie. I mean, the fact that that still feels fresh, I think, is a testament to how he was willing to be a pioneer in storytelling from the very beginning.
Not to mention, just with his superheroes translated into television series on Netflix, a blind superhero as Daredevil, a woman with all sorts of issues, beautifully played by Kristen Ritter, and Jessica Jones was one of the Peabody Award, maybe one of the first comic book characters in a television series to be translated and win that kind of prestigious honor. Iron Fist, Luke Cage, dealing with an African-American superhero, The Punisher, a villain who you could like in sort of an unusual way. He just seemed to make superheroes and villains with his staff so relatable to people and what they were dealing with from the 60s and even back way back when in the 40s with Captain America on up through our present day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that means a lot to people all over the place. And I think that the outpouring of kind of tributes and of grief with the news of his passing it's a testament to that.
And it's something we will be following, and I'm sure for many future episodes to come one way or another, because Marvel continues to be part of television, obviously. And let's start off with this, that Marvel is going to become a major part of Disney Plus. First of all, your thoughts about what is going to happen with Disney Plus and Hulu as a result of Disney taking over Fox, because it seems like that's going to be one of the major stories we're going to be following in 2019.
Yeah, so it seems like from what we know, we got a kind of like a airlifted drop of information during Disney's last earnings call last week about Disney Plus. We know that it is going to be called Disney Plus along the same lines as the ESPN Plus service that Disney launched earlier this year, its first subscription online service. And so the picture of it shaping up is that Disney wants to put its family-friendly, family-focused content on the Disney Plus site and then save its edgier, especially with the takeover of Fox, they'll have a broader library of kind of edgier, not quite so Disney soft focus style programming. They're going to reserve that for Hulu. So the idea is that if you're a household that's looking for more adult-oriented entertainment, Hulu is going to be the subscription that you might opt for. If you're a family with kids, you know, kind of one that wants to satisfy people of all ages and all generations, then Disney Plus is going to be the one that that's suited best for you. And of course, Disney would be happy if you subscribed to both. But that seems to be the way that they're going to position the two subscriptions that they will have majority ownership of after the Fox takeover.
One thing that we've been covering all year long seems to really hit home, and I've been seeing all sorts of events here in New York, conferences, special events, all sorts of stuff, particularly this fall, is that we really are in the age of smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and it seems to be dictating where TV is going to head next year and years to come. You have 2/3 to 3/4 of all U.S. households have these sets and devices. These devices are now having artificial intelligence, voice services from Siri to Alexa, Google Assistant being brought in. It allows you to control the set with your voice. What's the sense, not only from you, but from your colleagues at news.com about the impact that these products are going to have ultimately on the kind of television we see?
You know, it's really interesting. I mean, you're hearing from it almost invariably the companies that I cover, the YouTubes even, not necessarily just the Netflixes, where it's the kind of content that you would assume people, of course people want to watch something that's an hour-long show on a big TV. You're hearing that the biggest areas of growth, even for short-form content like YouTube, biggest areas of growth are on full-size televisions. And that's because you're right. There's so much more of an install base of people with either a connected streaming box or a streaming TV in and of itself. It may not necessarily change the kind of programming that is being made at first, but it does position the television as becoming not only the center of your video home, but also the center of just your home as our homes become more connected, as we turn our lights on with our voice and as our fridges and our screens in our kitchen are connected to the TV seems to be what may become the center hub for all that control.
And you just did a story about this last week where you reported that Comcast through X1, it's sort of smart TV-ish like feature, is now testing a app that would allow you to turn your lights on and off, adjust your air conditioning, look at your garage door camera, your front door camera, and all sorts of things that you just described.
Right, yeah. I mean, and that's a great example. You know, Comcast has been with their X1 platform, which is a, you know, traditional, quote unquote, a traditional cable service, has been really progressive about integrating things that might be threatening to a traditional cable company. You know, they've integrated Netflix, so you can watch Netflix just like if it were any other channel. They've integrated YouTube, so you could watch YouTube stuff just like it were any other channel. And it seems like they want to kind of take a little bit of a bite out of Google and Amazon's lunch if they can, where Google and Amazon are trying to dominate this world where they become the service and the centralized system for controlling your more technologically connected home. Comcast kind of wants to take a little bit of bite of that apple.
You're hearing Joan Sullivan. She is a senior digital media correspondent for CNetNews.com, available 24/7 all over the place. And Joan is with us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. So I'm going to have fun with you live from New York. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon of 2018 on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Also coming your way on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Joan, get it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Speaking of Amazon, don't forget, coming up on Friday, one of our guests will be Stephen Conrad, the creator executive producer of their popular series Patriot, just launched its second season last Friday and getting rave reviews for it. Stephen Conrad from Patriot, live with us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And speaking of Amazon, Joan, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were sitting together in the front row, and we heard Jennifer Salke, the new head of Amazon Studios. What was the big thing you heard from her?
Well, I remember I was, I think I asked you the exact same question after I was done because I wanted you to help me write the story that I was going to write after the presentation. So I was picking your brain for what the lead should be. But the things that I still stick in my mind after that discussion was, you know, I feel like the first thing that everyone kind of wanted to know was how was that entrance, you know, how was that transition where she came into Amazon Studios after them having lost their, or, you know, not lost, kind of glosses over the fact their former head of the studio was pushed out because of sexual harassment allegations and claims. And there were, you know, reports, there have been reports about how the environment there was not, I don't even know the right, I don't know, you can help me here. What's the right way to put it? It was not always encouraging of different voices and particularly female voices. At least that's what's been reported. Right. So, you know, one of the main things she had to address was what was that period like? How could she not only come in as somebody completely outside the Amazon system into this studio, tackle the actual programming elements of what they, you know, the mission that they have, and then also deal with all this emotional baggage. And so what she said is she took a long time just having kind of therapeutic talking with her staff to kind of clear the air and make sure that they knew that she was her own person and whatever the previous regime was like, she's the kind of leader who is, you know, extremely candid, but also my impression is that she likes to empower people to have their own responsibility there. I mean, was that the sense that you got from her too, that she likes to empower her staff to be able to make the calls that she can even make?
I did, Joan. And by the way, that event, which was over at the 9th Y, part of the Fast Company Innovation Festival, for me, and it took me a while to get it, I thought, in addition to that, the other big story that came out was that she wants to involve synergy with Amazon Studios. She just wasn't wants to be in her own silo or vacuum. She wants to have the Audible.com audiobook writers. Point of disclosure, Audible.com is a sponsor of this program, but she wants them involved in creating Amazon Studios programming. She wants the Amazon book authors to be involved with Amazon Studios programming. She wants a merchandising aspect, maybe an interactive aspect in some of her programs, mentioning the Blake Lively series that she wants to have some sort of interactive retail feature. And it was interesting that a couple of days later, the head of Alexa was at another S Company event, and he was not asked about television. And it was absolutely amazing. And because of the fact that the Fast Company moderator, who we will not name, did not allow for audience Q&A. By the way, Fast Company moderators, please put audience Q&A in your show, in your event. We'd like to have that. And every panel, by the way. But again, we wanted to ask, hey, Jennifer Salke said this. Are you talking with her about incorporating Alexa into Amazon Studios programming? And unfortunately, we could not get an answer because it was whipped away to another event. But I have a hunch that Saulke is going to try to bring the other divisions of Amazon together in her work in the future.
And you know what's really interesting is that, in a way, is an echo of how Amazon Studios started. You know, I don't know if all of your viewers and listeners are aware, but at the very beginning, Amazon Studios, the idea was that it would leverage the, you know, like publishers on Amazon, people like 50 Shades of Grey, who are just able to upload whatever ebook that they want to do on their own without an actual publisher. The idea that Amazon would mine these sort of diamonds in the rough via the tools that they already had in place for people to publish their own literature, but that could be a breeding ground for video programming. And it just never really turned out to work that way because it takes a lot of effort to dig through for diamonds in the rough. And they eventually just kind of went for a more traditional working with Hollywood A-listers as much as possible model, which I think Jennifer Saulke is going to be great at doing. I mean, she's definitely proven her chops in that respect before. But I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how they, especially with Amazon, how they integrate merchandising into their program, especially since Amazon has their Amazon X-ray feature where you can kind of get those IMDb details from people as they come on the screen, as they go off the screen, if you open up the kind of side panel where there's additional info. Obviously, I mean, people always talk about the idea of, you know, buy the watch that Brad Pitt's wearing in this scene. And whether or not people would actually do that and whether or not people would actually find that to be helpful, consumers would find that to be helpful, it seems like Amazon and Amazon Studios are in the perfect position to at least try it. They have the best shot.
Also, we need to see whether Amazon finally makes a full pitch in interactive television. We know that already if you have Amazon Fire TV and Alexa, you can order any Amazon product you want. But are they going to include Whole Foods into it? Are they going to include other things into it or emphasize it more? And again, use Alexa in a bigger way with Amazon Studios. I think we'll see some of that evolve next year. Let's go to some of the other players. Netflix, they've had a whale of a year. But you're already hearing about what they want to do next year. We suspect that we're going to see the first product from Shonda Rhimes, Ryan Murphy, Kenya Barris. But they also are talking about this Choose Your Own Adventure move, whether it's going to be individual episodes of shows or, as some people have reported, maybe a whole line of these series. What are you hearing?
So from the latest that we know that Netflix has tacitly confirmed is that they, A, already have a few Choose Your Own Adventure-style programs, and that their next move for it would be into those have previously been focused on children's titles around Puss in Boots, a couple other characters they have dedicated children. The idea is that they would have an interactive episode of Black Mirror, but what I've been hearing from people that work in interactive video is that Netflix is sort of pursuing this as an internal thing. They're not working with people externally, any companies, startups that have already sort of paved some of the ground in how to do interactive television and have those branching storylines. It seems like Netflix is sticking within its own shop, and if we can, who knows exactly? They're a gigantic company with a lot of technological prowess. But if they're sticking with the kind of technology that they have right now for their interactive features, if they do introduce something for an interactive element for Black Mirror, it'll probably be very similar to what they have now. It's not going to be all of a sudden breaking the mold that they've already created, which, to be candid, it's kind of rudimentary. The way that Netflix does branching interactive stories is basically choose A, choose B, and then the story follows that one. It doesn't have as much reactive ability, and it's not really integrated in a way that's super sophisticated in ways that other people that are only dedicated to interactive video have been able to play with. But to be fair to Netflix, they're doing it at a scale that nobody else really has had to tackle with. So it's understandable why they would try to keep it relatively simple.
Someone else, Joan, that looks like they're going to do it on a major scale next year is Walmart.
Right.
And they've got two ways to do it. One is Vudu, which they've already made a deal with MGM to do, and maybe other producers down the road to do original shows for that service, which is video on demand, available on smart TV sets and devices. But the bigger play, and frankly, I have to say, I thought this was very underreported by everybody in the media, or most people in the media, was they've made a $250 million bet on a project that's been around for several years now called Echo, E-K-O, Samsung, which has 30 million smart TV sets all over the place. MGM, venture capitalists are investors in this. It's an interactive website that does original interactive programming along the Choose Your Own Adventure line. One of them is, by the way, an MGM version, TV version of War Games, the famous movie with Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy. But now Walmart is getting into this with this big bet. They want to help create programming for this. There's talk that at some point they are going to put on the television set. What do you think of Walmart as a perhaps a surprise player in this whole TV arena?
Surprise is the right word. Who would have thought that the biggest corporate investment in interactive video would have been from Walmart? Because I didn't. I didn't see that one coming at all. But you're right. I mean, that $250 million is, as far as I know, and I've been following this space pretty closely for a while, that's the most that any one company has ever invested in interactive storytelling, interactive video storytelling. So, I mean, you know, who knows what that's actually going to look like. And I've been trying to keep in touch with Walmart, and they're, you know, not being forthcoming about when we can expect to see some things. The idea, you know, you can imagine some of the things that they posited just in their press materials about what the, you know, what this partnership could mean is the idea of having sort of like a voice competition, but for that involves some sort of shopping, you know, where people, audience members get to vote on some performative aspect, whether maybe, you know, maybe it's a combination of HGTV where people competitively design a room with Walmart furnishings. Who knows? I'm sort of just kind of brainstorming what they could potentially have in mind, but they could also be trying to develop interactive video just as promotional material, you know, like having an advertisement on steroids where you, instead of seeing apparel that suits many different kinds of people, you can sort of give them a little bit of information up front, and they would only have models showing clothing that fits, you know, I'm a 30-something woman that kind of appeals to 30-something women, or for you, a dapper gentleman of leisure like yourself, for people like you. So who knows, but I know I wasn't expecting Walmart to be all of a sudden a giant player in this space.
We're going to see, because if they come through, I think some other folks can get in, but there's already talk that Costco may do something in the interactive retail space with television. We'll see. Before we go, we have to get two more cup players in at least, Apple and Warner Media. With Apple TV continues to be the product that sells, but it's still not talked about by Apple's management at their events. Last month in Silicon Valley, 2 weeks ago, the Brooklyn Academy of Music. I'm on the record of this. I think this was a absolutely mistaken blown opportunity to talk about both. I think it was inexcusable. And also, the PR at Apple is just awful. And then on top of that, we now have Apple getting into virtual programming next year. So you wonder, A, where they're at with that, and B, if they are, how that will impact the credibility, how the lack of talk about Apple TV, the process or the product is going to play one positive or negatively with Apple TV, the programming service, or Apple TV, the programming.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, my suspicion is that the reason they haven't talked about Apple TV lately is because they have been working so much on their service. You know, it's not any secret, although Apple is Apple and they never talk about anything until they're ready to talk about it. It's like everybody knows that they have recruited deals with Oprah and with who else? I'm sure you can list off some of the people that they've brought on board. There's Oprah. There's and like Shyamalan is making something. Isn't Steven Spielberg making something for them now? Is that true?
Yeah. Damon Chazelle is working on a series, and we also have Reese Witherspoon working on a series or two. They have a version of Foundation, the Isaac Asimov classic novel. In terms of the programming, it looks really solid. It looks like a very solid lineup with a lot of both familiar and new talent. The Oprah thing is a big one because, of course, she's still doing OWN. So I think that the programming could be there, and they could have like one or more major shows breaking loose. Mm-hmm. The question is, how soon will it be, how will it be done, and all that. We're running short of time, Joe, but I want to get your thoughts on Warner Media because it's interesting that so far what they said a lot about at least the – in sort of a generic way, what they want to do, but what they haven't said is, will there be original programming? Will there be programming made for the service, like what Disney's going to do with Disney+? And you sort of wonder, anything you're hearing about whether, in fact, there will be original programming in Warner Media's service, whatever it ends up being next fall.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that I haven't heard anything about that personally in my reporting or in talking to sources. But, I mean, just guessing, my best guess from, you know, the people that I talk to, you know, you can create original programming at a budget level and a commitment level that Warner can handle. So, whether or not that means that they're going to, it seems like it's a pretty not risky bet to have some sort of original program. Where it becomes a risky bet if you're not Apple with like $300 billion of a war chest is just how much resource you want to devote to putting in the shows and to marketing those shows. And what Facebook Watch, for example, you were talking about that earlier, what that shows is that it's really hard to break through into the broader cultural conversation unless you have something like Sorry for Your Loss, where it just happens to hit that magic and that lightning in a bottle of a great concept, a great cast, great writing, and the audience that wants to be passionate about it. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they have original content. I think I'd be surprised if they're going to put the same sort of investment that they put behind their traditional programming behind something that's original.
They certainly got a lot of levers to pull, whether it's Warner Brothers, HBO, TBS, TNT, True TV, Cartoon Network, Boomerang. They certainly can go a lot of ways in terms of getting original programming and really create good quality stuff in a hurry. And speaking of Facebook Watch, I really believe that this is the sleeper story of the year, and we're going to see whether Queen America, who's, again, a creator we're going to have on our show next Wednesday, whether we're going to see more original scripted and unscripted shows come up, and if they do, you get a sense that Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg have spent a lot more on that service and really promote the television aspect of it in terms of access on smart TV sets and devices next year. Boy, time has gone by very fast. Joan Solson, thank you again for being with us. Let's have you back before the year is out. It's always a pleasure to have you and get your thoughts going.
Thank you. Love you, Simon.
You too, Joan. Take care. All the greatest.
Bye.
Joan Saltzman, senior digital media writer for CNetNews.com. Check out her work and her colleagues' work at www.newsnews.com. Friday on Smart TV Televised, Stephen Conrad from Patriot on Amazon. And next Wednesday, one of our back-to-back-to-back episodes for Thanksgiving week, Megan Oppenheimer, the creator of Queen America on Facebook Watch. If you haven't made out today's program, want to catch up with an episode of this, go to our homepage, boxofradio.com/televised. Don't forget to check out the podcast version. Number of ways you can do it, iTunes, Apple TV, Speakers Podcast app, and of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network at iHeartRadio.com. What do you think about today's program? What do you think about Stan Lee and his contribution both to comics and to TV? Love to hear from you. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Remember, we always love what you have to say because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Our production associate at BTR is Candace Williams. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonberg is executive content producer. The co-founders of Blog Talk Radio are Alan Levy and Bob Charish. The Bobby Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. For that free audiobook and two Audible theater productions, it's audibletrial.com/televised. The Bobby Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening, and please honor, before this day is out, all the people, veterans and their families, who have done a beautiful job of serving our country and our world, and those that continue to do so in their stead. We're back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And please keep your thoughts for all the people who are dealing with the aftermath and the ongoing crisis of the California fires. They really need your help and your support, and yet you can donate to the Red Cross and other charity organizations. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.